The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1002, I think it is, lads. Yeah, 1002. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a weekend podcast, by the way. That's these are not CEOs I've got with me. These are...
CEO, clever, eager, opportunistic.
Yeah, I was looking for another sort of set of initials that would suit you, but I realised the one I come up with then isn't, you know, I can't broadcast it.
No, it's not broadcast.
No. There we are. But anyway, lads, I've got to say, ending the week on a positive note with BT anyway. BT is, we're recording this right now, market doesn't close on a Friday. BT, which is part of our experiment that's gone wrong a little bit, is, 50 trades or less, to £1,000 to £100,000, getting 10% each trade, and then, piling it, rolling it over. BT sort of went through support, kept falling. But today... Ofcom came out with their ruling, which has been hanging over them like a sword, you know, Damocles' sword for months and years almost, about competition within Openreach and all that. And it's come out and they've judged that, apparently, it isn't as bad as people think, you know. They thought it was going to be worse. The charge, they're allowed to charge wholesale prices to other competitors, wasn't as low as they thought it was going to be. And also, it ends uncertainty. And there's always that cliche, stock market hates uncertainty, you know, because you can't do anything with that. You can't forecast any profits or earnings if you have uncertainty. If you have certainty, then you can, and it's not as bad. So BT is now my biggest riser in my portfolio. Is that the same with you lot, or what?
What, today?
Yes, today. No, overall, generally.
not overall. Today, yes, they are.
Steve, take part if you want to.
I haven't checked today, to be honest. I've been a bit busy. I've been, you know, out frolicking.
Out frolicking? What's more busy than stocks and shares? What's more important than that?
Frolic with your shares.
I've literally just logged in now, so I can see some blue and some reds. That's all I can comment on my portfolio today.
Well, I've got to say, I did say a while back, 225 was the lowest it's going to go. It did go to that, 225, and it didn't go lower, and it closed there.
Did you say that, or did Nicola Duke say that?
No, she said 235. 235, she said. 235, Steve. Yeah, no, 235.
I'm pretty sure she said 25, but there we go.
No, she said 235.
Look at Steve getting all punchy.
Yes, I said 225. No, she said on Friday's podcast, if you want to listen to it, Steve, that ideally it should have stopped at 235. But I just laughed at that. I said, ideally? What are you talking about, ideally? That's because it was your target. I mean, you can't tell a share price that. It doesn't make any sense. Ideally, that's where you should have stopped, actually. Shouldn't have gone below that. But yeah, 225, and I think that, you know, when you get a stock like BT rising, majorly, if you know anything about charts, look at an indicator called the RSI, Relative Strength Index. That has been majorly oversold. It hasn't been that oversold on a daily since the financial crash, and it's literally, I think it's a bit further down than that now. So you can see how oversold that is. And we got a 4% bounce today in a FTSE 100 stock like BT. That's a lot of money, you know. What's 4% of 24 billion? It's a lot of money. And so it's the biggest rise on the FTSE 100 index. So this seems like a turnaround, the start of a turnaround. Of course, it won't go straight up, but it'll bounce up now. And hopefully, boys, will end up going back. It's been going down for a long time, isn't it? Like a couple of years, pretty much, the share price. But so hopefully the direction of travel has changed. The momentum is going to go now from massive selling to buying. And look at the volume here. You've got 15 million is the average daily volume of BT. Already, it's not even market close yet. Hour and a half left. It's 27 million. Now, do the math on that. I worked out earlier on 20 million. It's about 50 million pounds have been traded in that's 5-0 in BT. So, obviously, it's more than that now. So, so I'm quite confident now it's changing direction. And I'm glad because Megan has been giving me a really heartache about it. Did I tell you I'd write a contract out to her?
No, you didn't. She sent it to us.
Yeah, as witnesses.
Yeah. Did she?
Yeah.
Really? And she's serious about it. She's like, that's serious.
Yeah.
She said to me, you know, basically, she wants to take part in stocks and shares, but remove any risk whatsoever. So, that's not investing.
Right.
There's risk and reward. You can't just have the reward part.
Yeah, otherwise, you want to take and eat it, whatever it is.
I've got to agree to buy the stocks, the amount I offer, exact same price she paid them for, at the end of this year. But if they go up, obviously, she gets the extra. So I said, why, you can't lose. She said, no. And every time it goes down, or it has been going down, she said, yes, the agreement's still in place, though, isn't it? So it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me.
Being married, though, isn't her money your money, etc.?
I keep saying that to her. What's mine is mine, what's yours is mine and yours.
That's what struck me with the contract that she forwarded to me and Steve. It was like, oh, what a blissfully trusting marriage you have there.
But that is money she saved for the kids. And I said, they're my kids as well. You understand that? Yeah.
Well, one of them is.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure the other one. I'm not sure about the little Chinese girl. I don't know where she'd come from. But anyway, yes, but yes, all fine there. And so, listen, Paddy, a friend of mine, used to work with the Capital Radio. He's getting into investing. In fact, he bought BT around about 225, 226, I think he did. So he bought pretty much at the bottom. Famous last words. But he's asking me lots of relevant questions. And I think we should get Paddy on the podcast because it's on WhatsApp and he's asked me loads of questions and I can't think.
Help him, but Steve will be able to help him.
Yeah. Exactly. Steve is the man. And one of the things he says was, do you have to invest all your money, you know, before the financial end of year? And I thought, I never thought of this before. And I thought, so, you know, like I said, if you are a newbie, set up a stocks and shares ISA. That way the government can't take any tax if you make money on stocks and shares. If you have a normal stocks and shares account, capital gains tax kicks in after 11,000 of profit. So if you make more than 11,000, you have to pay tax. Stocks and shares ISA, you don't. So you can put 20 grand every financial year into the stocks and shares ISA. That then is a wrapper. You can't, the tax man can't touch that.
There is an advantage of not having an ISA, which, because I did have and one which wasn't an ISA when I ran out of money to invest in my ISA, is when you lose lots of money, you can claim it against your tax bill.
You can offset it, yes. You can offset the tax. That's right, you can do that. Some people do that. But I'd prefer to make a gain, though. You know.
To be fair. At start, I didn't kind of do that, so I claimed a little bit back.
That's a very negative of a positive. It's a very positive of a negative, isn't it? But I mean, big negative, small positive.
I hadn't thought of what Paddy's saying there about investing all your money. I've never thought of it that way. That's quite an odd way of looking at it.
There's questions that he comes up with because he's new that I wouldn't have thought of. And he said, just to invest all of it before. I said, no, you can put 20, if you've got 20 grand spare. You can put 20 grand in there, you can sit in cash there for the rest of your life if you want to. But, and I think some ISAs actually give you interest on the cash. I know Barclays did a while back, don't know if they do any more. So there we are. So, and then every year you can put 20 grand in, and it doesn't matter how much money you earn off that 20 grand, it's tax free. So if you change that 20 grand into a billion, like Steve has done, then, it's tax free. You can't know anything about that. And you can withdraw any amount you want to out of that, out of the account. So I was going to, as always, Twitter's provided a bit of content this week. Because someone just kept sort of, it's odd, isn't it? When I go on Twitter, right, you've got to be careful. And I saw one person just doing GIFs and ramping a stock. And I thought I knew them quite well because we've been, sort of following each other for a while. And I just tweeted them a direct message. I said, listen, do me a favour. I said, have you got everything in that company? I mean, home, farm, kids, family. Because every 10 minutes, half an hour, they're just, a GIF. I mean, this ticker, nothing else. And I said, no. I said, I'm doing very well. I'm doing very well for myself. I said, well, why don't you share your knowledge on that company rather than just put GIFs? A Lambo's doing donuts. What's the point of that? That's, and the company ticker, that's all he's doing. Lambo's and donuts and the company. And then in the end, he blocked me and said, I'm concerned about your messaging, and blocked me. And I thought, what are you blocking me for? I said, I muted him anyway because it's getting on my nerves. All I've seen was GIFs of Lambos all the time. and then one of the things he said to me, oh, I just follow this person. And they talk about just not doing any research, just following people, into trades. And also, I had someone slagging me off. I couldn't see them though because I previously blocked them. And they were slagging me off for some stock or something that's gone down, And I'm thinking, hang on a second. First and foremost, right, people say do your own research. I understand that, but if you're new, you don't know what is research, I suppose. So that's quite hard. So you do follow some people, anything. But what you can't do, you can't blame someone you've followed into a trade if that share price goes down. It's your money. You've hit the buy button. I didn't come around there and put the money into it yourself. Take responsibility for your own money. Now, if you don't believe that stock is any good, don't buy it, you know.
I've tried my best to blame you for as many of my losses, but you know, even I can't blame you.
But also, if you're
going into a trade, like, you don't know at what point that other person is getting it. That might be like a second tranche of shares they're buying or whatever. You don't know the full strategy. You're just seeing them buying some shares, or they're saying they're buying some shares. So, yeah. It's not a good strategy just to follow blindly into a trade, is it?
Well, no. Exactly. If I bought a company, I bang on about it, you know, and then it goes up by like 100 or 200%, and you know, you see that tweet that's been retweeted a couple of times or whatever, and it's like a week previously or something like that, or you know, and you jump in and then it comes back. You can't blame for that. Yeah. It's ridiculous. The valuation is different. Everything's different about the company, you know, and that's what I'm saying. A company changes. It's very dynamic. When a company's share price goes up, that means the valuation of the company goes up. And that changes the way you should look at a company. A lot of people don't understand this. When I say do your own research, or people say this generally, do your own research. What you should be doing, the first and foremost thing, and that's why I try to put this acronym together, you know? First, and I've changed it a little bit, because it's the way I look at stocks now. And the first thing you should ever look at when looking at a company is the valuation of a company. Steve, what do I mean by that?
What do you mean?
I love that pregnant pause. What do you mean?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Steve, when I say, when you're looking at a company, the first thing you should look at really is the valuation of a company, right? What do I mean by that? And you will come back with, what do you mean?
The share price.
What do I mean? It's not the valuation, is it? Because the share price of one company could be 10 pence, could be 10 pence of another company. They're not valued at the same, are they?
Share price times the number of shares.
Yeah, so it's the market cap.
There we go.
Do you understand what the market cap is? Because, I mean, Paddy asked me a couple of times for different shares, and he said, why is this share coming down? This is a good. In fact, he talked about Vesarian. He said, why is that coming down? And I said, well, if you could look at it, it's done an amazing rise from, like, you know, 10 pence in the last few weeks up to £1.30. You know, it's a 13 bagger pretty much there. And so as that's gone up, of course, the valuation that company's gone, that means it's market capitalization. That is their, all the shares timed by the actual share price. So let's say, for example, you've got 10 shares and they're a pound each. The market cap of that company is £10. Right now, with companies have a lot more shares than that. But as the share price goes up, the valuation of that company goes up. So it's more, you know, it's highly valued then. And so you've got to look at, so it's not as much value baked into that, say, a 10 pence, as it is at 1.30 if you're going for Vitarian or any other company. You know what I'm saying? So there comes a level where they're either underpriced, fairly priced, or overpriced. So you've got to look at that. So that's why one of the first things you should ever do when looking at a company, look at the market capitalization, then you have to look at the potential. Now, it's hard to do that in tech stocks or pre-revenue stocks. You can more easily do it with resource stocks like, you know, Ferrum Crescent, for example, Asia Met, things like this, or oil companies like Upland Resources, because you have potential barrels of oil they're going to bring up, or zinc or lead or copper, so you can see, and there's a resource. So when you look at resource companies, what's worth doing is, first of all, look at the market capitalization. Right. Then, you know, with resource companies, for example, they're digging up, you know, sort of gold, whatever, copper, some of that, it's always good to know at what level they're at. If they're because resource companies go through several stages in their life. They're exploration, that's where they're obviously looking for mineralization, some area, looking for whatever they're looking for. And then they start drilling, and then they start developing that asset, you know, and they develop it. And so it goes from exploration to development, then to production. And that's when they start selling it. But in between development, they've got to develop a mine, which costs lots of money. So when you look at a company, you have to look at, where is it at in its journey here? Is it an exploration company? Is it a development company? Or is it a production? Now there's certain sort of value metrics that de-risks these projects along the way. And one of them are getting an identified resource, like a JORC resource. And that's a code or a compliance model that's globally recognised, you know? And if you look at something like the Ferrum Crescent or Armadale Capital, small companies, they have JORC resources. And that means their resource is worldwide recognised and measured to a certain standard. Now, if the company hasn't got that yet, and they intend to do it, it's worth thinking, oh, right, because I know companies at the moment, exploration companies, haven't got any JORC resource, and yet they're valued quite highly. They haven't got a resource. And to a certain level of journeys they go through, for example, then they go through a scoping study, maybe then a pre-feasibility study to show you, you know, what the economics around this project are. But you can sort of work out, you know, roughly what their valuation is before that, or what it should be. Like I did that with Farum Crescent. If you look at the blog, you know, you know how much they've got in the ground there, and yet that resource they drill, so they'll do drills to pick up how big the resource is, then do infill drilling to see what it's like in between those holes, and then look beyond that and see if they can extend that resource. And with Farum Crescent, that resource is still open at certain ends, so they haven't drilled to the right to the end of that resource, so it still continues, it can get bigger. So 16 million tons of zinc and lead, but it could get bigger. So
talk about Farum Crescent now, or do you want to finish your little bit?
Yeah, what I'm saying is, when you're looking at a company, always look at the valuation straight away.
And then
look at a chart, maybe. That's why my acronym, Steve. What's my acronym? I always look at
cash.
I want to write a little email book, ebook. You know, just a quick thing on sort of valuing companies, because it's what I work to now, and I'm going to stick it up in front of me, the acronym. But I want to write a little thing, and yeah, cash. But the cash has changed. Now you laughed last time because I changed it to two C's. Because
it's like you got a stutter.
Yeah, but I'm trying to find an acronym that works. But in these two C's, the first one is right capitalization. And that's the market cap of a company. That, to me, that's the most important thing. So that's got to be at the top there, rather than cash itself. It's got to be at the top there. You've got to look at the valuation of the company. Because without that, you can't do anything with the company. Unless you can value the company, look at the market cap, you can't, you know, you don't know where it sits. And like I said, if a company's there, it's got a million ounces of gold in the ground, and it's a 1 million market cap, that's amazing. If it's got a million ounces of gold in the ground and it's a billion market cap, it's not so amazing. You know, so it's completely relevant to what they do and what they've got. So that's what that's first. The second C is chart, because that is also very important. Because you look at a chart and avoid a spike. You know, if you avoid a spike, you're fine. If it's risen quickly in the last couple of days, then, you know, try and avoid, let it come back a bit. Like I said, there's two things you can do to improve your investing. And that's to research a company, buy on a down day, you know, and sell if you've seen the company's gone hit high and it's still going to sell on an up day. If you can do that and avoid the fear of missing out, then you'll improve yourself. Anyway, that's a C. Two C's for cash. A is assets. Yeah. C, S is shareholders. H is
what happened to C? The original C was cash, wasn't it?
Yes, but A assets is in there. See, so if you look at the balance sheet. Assets is in there. It's cash. That's an asset.
So I quite like the idea of three C's there.
Cash. No, but assets. You should look at. You should always try and look at the balance sheet. You know, and a cash flow statement, and see what's going on there, and you know, see what's going on. Basically, that is, you know, cash is an asset. So there we are. So it makes it small caps. You always got to know how much cash a company has, because they're generally not, you know, profit making or revenue generating until they become a producer. It's good. Sorry, Pete, you want to talk about Farum Crescent? I'm talking quickly because I've got to leave. We're driving to South Wales, and the missus is going to start knocking the door any minute, saying, come on, we've got to pick the kids up. So anyway.
Yeah, and also she's losing a lot of money on BT. Farum Crescent, I just don't quite understand. I mean, I bought some more because I think I really like the price. You've got a market cap of less than 3 million, and yet you've got all these huge assets that potentially they could realise. I understand it's going to cost a lot of money to get them out of the ground. That will need funding, so there might be a placing, whatever. But I don't understand why it's so cheap, and it's like it looks too good to be true. So it probably is. But, you know, what's going on there? What are your thoughts?
Well, at the moment, it's down again today. So I bought some the other day. They're down 10%. I bought some, and they're down about a percent a day. But they're 2.7 million market cap now. The thoughts of this, it's a turnaround play. It's a bit like Armadale Capital. Previous board did nothing, sort of tarnished the reputation of the company a little bit. A lot of people got burnt. I know a lot of private investors. I've said to them, I've tweeted out my blog on Farum Crescent, and they said, no, I was burnt there before. And so it's almost like people don't want to go there, because the new board's come in. So that's right. But there's also this little thing about some people saying they need a placing. They need to do a placing. So what you got here, you got the short term fighting with the long term. And of course, they're still way off ever producing any zinc or lead at this place. They're still sort of exploring and developing this asset, you know? So there's a long way to go yet. It's like Asia Met, you know? We sort of knew the same thing. At the time, we were thinking, will this ever get going? Or you know, will it ever be a big stock? And Tony Menino just come on saying, listen, copper will start to rally. You know, zinc is already at a 10-year high. And this is it's close to become a world-class resource, Farum Crescent. So it will get there. it needs, I mean, there are some legacy holders of stock in the company who are also selling on E-Rise. That's putting a lot of pressure on the stock. Once that's cleared out, once they get some money, and people, there's another thing, there's people waiting for the placing to happen. I won't do that. There's a lot of private investors who are short-termists, maybe, or they just generally don't like the P word, you know? The placing, just they run to the hills.
But they're trading, aren't they, probably? They're trading.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, you've got to be aware, there are people who just do placings, the private investors, that just do placings, and you'll see them ramping any old rubbish on Twitter because they've got a placing in it. They have no... They have no loyalty, or they don't care about the long-term story here. So they'll get 10-20% and they'll do a runner. So all of a sudden, it's the best stock in the world. They get 20%, they never mention it again. What? How can you change your mind? So this is a long-term story, fighting with those short-term sort of traders, you know? And so it will. I mean, these levels, 2.7 million, it's ridiculous. Mm. That's ridiculous. Mm. Over 3 billion of I mean, you know,
I think you only need a fraction of the potential to be realised for it to be profitable.
Let's be realistic, right? There's a company called Cedric Asian Metals bought a company very similar, 25 million tonnes, but Ferrum Crescent Resources probably not far off that when they were upgraded. They bought that for $403 million, right? That was a producing mine, though. So you've probably got $100 million worth of capital expenditure to get that mine going. So take that, bring that down to, like, so $300 million. And at the resource, even if you half that, $150 million, you know, still way above where we're at the moment. So, but it takes a long time. There's a lot of uncertainties. But there's still... I don't bother with, I don't worry about placings. I just see a longer term thing here, because I think if it drops a bit further, I'll buy some more. It's fine. I'm not going to take part in the placing if there is a placing. But people are waiting for the placing. But what they don't understand, what could happen in the meantime, I've seen this happen many a time, the company will not do a placing down here. They will do a placing after the share price has risen a bit. And why would they do that? And how can they do that? Well, what they do is release some more positive news. And so it may fly all of a sudden, you know, they'll do a placing off the back of that. And so.
Yeah.
I'm just saying,
which is what Asia Met did, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you show this is what we got, this is a resource, and then it flies a little bit and you do a placing. But I mean, you know.
I understand people if you've been burnt and you've got our, you know, you've got a bad kind of vibe with the whole thing, and then you don't want to go back into it. I understand that. But coming afresh to it now, and there's a new board anyway, I'm seeing it as a whole new, because I've not been involved ever before. I'm looking for the catch, really.
I tell you, I'm writing my blog on Armadale Capital this week. Now, they're very similar to Ferrum Crescent. First of all, they've both got good JORC resources, very good resources, you know. Armadale Capital is in graphite. And I didn't, when I was watching the Brits the other night, I was writing my blog, and I said, I quite like this process of writing a blog, because you have to learn about the commodity. Whenever you're looking at commodities, you have to look at what the market supply is like. You know, is it in deficit? Is it oversupplied? You know, what's the profile here? What are people saying, the experts? And I didn't realize this is a surprise for you. You know, graphite, right? There is 10 to 30 times more graphite in a lithium-ion battery than lithium.
Dun, dun, dun.
Does that surprise you, Steve?
Oh, yeah, completely shocked me. Yeah.
He fell off his stool.
Mm. 10 to 30 times more graphite in a lithium-ion battery than... Why is it called lithium-ion? Elon Musk... You know who Elon Musk is now, Steve, didn't you?
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah. Now I do.
Well, he said our battery shouldn't be called lithium-ion. It should be called nickel graphite. Because there's more nickel and graphite in them. And so Armadale Capital. Now, graphite is a very odd, very complex market. I keep reading about it to understand. 70% of graphite is lost through processing. You have to get a very high purity value for graphite to work, right? So 70% is lost. And now China were the big sort of graphite producers and users, but they've had a clampdown, and it's not a temporary clampdown, on their... all the CO2s and all the pollution they're kicking out. You know, the government's clamped down it. So a lot of old furnaces are shut down. So it's taking a lot of supply off the market. Now, combine this with the fact that, you know, 30% of global car sales are going to be sort of electric vehicles by 2030, around about that much. And that's running at 1.3% now, apparently, total global vehicles, EVs. And you can see the dynamic here. Already the graphite market is undersupplied anyway. So you've got a very high purity graphite. There's very few places in the world that can get this. Now, Armadillo Capital have this, a very high quality graphite, massive resource, 51 million tons, and yet they're sub, 5 million market cap? And they've had a new board as well, same as Fair and Crescent, and they've just had a JORC upgrade. JORC. So JORC resource, you know, globally recognised resource there, and it's looking good. And do you know, as I'm talking right now, very oddly, they've just overtaken BT as my biggest riser today.
There we go.
Which is slightly annoying. If you look at my tweets, I've not mentioned them at all ever, because I like to write a blog about something that will get some upside for people, you know. Mm. So I tend to avoid writing blogs about companies that have rallied strongly, because I want to provide some upside potential for people, a bit of quality.
You have the ability to to shift that price, don't you?
The thing is, a lot of so many companies around, and so many people don't look at companies. If you just focus and highlight the company's potential, and it's a small cap, it can fly. Someone puts a big trade in there, it'll fly, and it'll start going. So as long as there's no sellers around, which is unusual for small caps, there are sellers around, but it can fly on next to nothing.
Steve, get on Twitter now and de-ramp it so it goes down, and then Justin can come in with his blog.
Steve, what you want to do, Steve, is say, I'm buying Armadale Capital. I think it's a big one to go, and then people will start selling.
Hey, that's not a bad idea, is it? Sadly, I'm off Twitter at the moment.
Why?
Yeah, why?
What, for Lent?
Been banned.
No, I just don't get it.
You don't get it? Are you nuts? No.
It's not to get.
It's just, I don't know, why write short little sentences when you could do it in pictures?
You could do that as well, Steve. They don't ban pictures. Yeah. Pictures are allowed.
Yeah, but like something like Instagram, you can scroll through and see nice pictures, can't you? It's just easier, isn't it? And,
Will the Twitter share price be hit? Like, what's her face?
No, you watch it. You watch it. That was Snapchat, that was, yeah.
Yeah.
Steve seeing Twitter live on the podcast.
Yeah, you watch it. Paul.
Don't diss it now, Steve. In fact, Twitter just first time ever turned a profit, haven't they? Like RBS. Oh, RBS has done one before, the last 10 years. But, but Twitter just turned a profit. Didn't that show how poor a business model Snapchat is? If one person, Kylie Jenner, says, I don't use the messaging anymore, and then it drops by 1.3 billion in valuation. Just shows how overpriced it is. I tried Snapchat for a while, and it was the first time I ever felt too old for a social media thing. Yeah. And I didn't understand it at all. I couldn't work it. And I thought, I don't understand that at all. And I did feel old, but it turns out it was just rubbish. Just rubbish. That's all it is, isn't it, really?
Well, I know a couple of youngsters use it, and that's the way they communicate. I mean, that's just
like Kylie Jenner, whatever her name is, off it, and Steve's not on it either.
Steve's off Twitter.
Hang on, are you on, Steve? What do you do then? Instagram.
Instagram. I do have. I haven't closed down my Twitter account. I've still got it there, but it's not on my front page on my phone anymore. I very rarely look at it. And same with Snapchat.
Front page.
Yeah. See, it's been bumped to page 3 on the phone.
And Snapchat. It's you and Kylie Jenner. They're a knacker there, aren't they?
That'll be another billion off once that news breaks.
Yeah, Steve will not be showing his bum cleavage on there anymore, ladies and gentlemen.
It's fine. I put little cute ears on it when I do that.
Yeah. Steve just turning around with his finger to his lips like that, just showing his bum cleavage. Hello. Right, listen, Megan's actually shouting and calling me on my phone, so I've got to go. Lads, it was a short podcast, but hopefully had some value in there. So what I'm saying is, hang on, look, here. Hello? Yeah, just got to get the kids, all right? All right, then.
Okay, all right, lads, sorry.
So if you take anything from this podcast, when you say, do your research, learn how to value a company, even if it's a non-revenue generating company, try and look at the market capitalization and see what size it is, then see what the potential is. And that's, it will help you towards valuing a company, hopefully, Have a nice weekend, guys. All right, bye-bye then.
Okay. Yes.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Right, better go, lads, because I've got to put my heads up.
Yeah. Cheers. Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.